What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to our over-under special on the Bird Calls, SB Nation's podcast dedicated to your Pelicans and thebirdrights.com. I'm your host, Preston Ellis, and today we are joined by Zachary Junda, our second-time guest. What's up, Zach?
Unless it's a good Saturday. We got basketball back, we got college football, we got NFL. It's a good time of the sports calendar.
Yeah, it's the best time of the sports year, in my opinion. Everything's just super exciting. It's the earliest part of the NFL and the NBA, so everybody's still super optimistic. And as we speak, we're getting live reports from Pelicans training camp at the Smoothie King Center from Ollie. He's posting that in our little group. So exciting stuff. He's really high on, he says Jordan Crawford and Ian Clark are literally splashing everything they take. So it's an exciting time to be a Pelican fan. But before we move on, make sure you check out our previous podcast with said Ollie and Kevin, recapping Media Day. That was last week. And if you want to know more about the Pelicans Southwest Division foes, go back and check our previous episodes featuring some outside experts from each team. And as always, make sure that you rate us on iTunes, please. We have almost 30,000 downloads and we only have 24 ratings. What's going on, guys? So do us a favor. We appreciate it so much. It really is so helpful to our podcast. Thank you. If you have a moment, do that for us. Zach, you ready for this, man?
Yes, absolutely. Let's do it. And let me just disclose. We here at the Birds Rights do not actually endorse gambling. But,
nope.
But if you partake in such vices, this is what you should listen to.
Yes, nice work. All right, we're breaking down these over-unders now. These are, Zach and I just discussed this. These are all according to Westgate Las Vegas Superbook as posted on ESPN.com on September 5th. But I also have the more recently updated numbers from VegasInsider.com as posted September 26th. So you can see the difference that Carmelo Anthony and Dante Cunningham make in the eyes of Las Vegas. Okay, Zach, where do you want to start? You want to go contenders or bottom dwellers first?
Let's do bottom dwellers first.
All right, let's start with the back. We've got the Phoenix Suns at 28.5. Let me get to the transactions. And let's see what they did last year. Okay, so they got Anthony Bennett, Troy Daniels. They just acquired in a trade with Memphis. Josh Jackson, Mike James. Let's see, who'd they lose? They only lost Leandro Barbosa and Ronnie Price. And, of course, they added Peter Jok from the said Pelicans. And they won 24 games last year. They're at 28.5. Over or under, Zach?
I'm going to take the over. I don't think the Suns are going to be good. They'll probably be the last place team in the West. But I like the Josh Jackson. I kind of like this young Phoenix team. I think, and I got a question for you. At what point does that Phoenix team take that step? Is it the year after? Is it 2 years? Because I think this Phoenix Suns team has some promise.
It's tricky because they and Sacramento do have a lot of young talent that we don't really know. You know, at what point they're going to take the next step. You got some second year guys in Dragon Bender and Marquise Chris, who Chris has a really high upside. But I remember even when he was coming out of college, we had this debate about whether or not he was going to reach his upside or just stay at the bottom because he had no middle ground, according to a lot of scouts. He's either going to be an all-star or he's going to be a complete bust, according to those guys. And we didn't really see too much from him last year. Dragon Bender is still super young. And then we've got these kind of in the same situation that Sacramento is, where they have these veterans like an Eric Bledsoe who are surrounded by these younger guys like, you know, Devin Booker and Tyler Ulis and TJ Warren. And you almost sort of think that they should get rid of these Jared Dudleys and Eric Bledsoe and just, you know, tank, let these young guys get some time. But it's just tricky to me because where does Eric Bledsoe fit in when Devin Booker needs the ball? Where does Tyson Chandler fit in? When you know you've got to get Alan Williams, Marquise Chris on the floor, Alex Len, these younger guys, I think it's confusing, and I think at the end of the day they let these young guys get some time and hopefully trade Eric Bledsoe at some point to a contender and just try to get a high lottery pick.
Yeah, and I really like these young pieces they have. I like Tyler Ulis. I like Devin Booker. I can't buy enough Devin Booker stock. I'm gonna go bankrupt buying Devin Booker stock. I like Josh Jackson. But you could also argue Phoenix is embraced. I can't believe Anthony Bennett's on another NBA roster. I thought he was done. I can't believe he's back. My God, that's Anthony Bennett's music, you know?
Yeah, I know. Eric, oh, my God, what the hell? Anthony Bennett's back
God,
in the NBA.
They killed him.
I thought he was dead. He's back. Oh, my God. No, I think he's probably just a training camp body. All of these, I'm on Hispanos NBA right now. Thanks to them for all these transactions right in front of me. And they have they have 20 roster spots for each team. So a lot of these guys aren't actually going to play in the NBA next year. Like, I'm looking at Sacramento right now, and I'm looking at Jakar Sampson and Matt Jones. I have no idea who those guys are. Maybe you do. Maybe you're a bigger fan of the NBA than I am, but I would have to assume that those guys are not going to be in the NBA next year. And Anthony Bennett hasn't showed us anything in the NBA or in Europe or in Canada at this point to make us believe that he's gonna turn the tide and come out and be a meaningful minute guy in the NBA. You ready to move on? Anything else to go on the Suns about?
No, I just want to say again, I am all for Devin Booker. I am team Devin Booker. In case anybody wants to sell me more stock, please send me all of it.
What do you do with Eric Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler at this point? Those guys are tricky. They're still good NBA players. Don't they belong on another team?
I think they do, but I would keep Tyson Chandler more so than Bledsoe. I think just because Chandler's kind of at the end of his run, I think you need bodies like that guy in your locker room. Kind of like, I'm looking, maybe we can segue into the Sacramento thing, like a Vince Carter, like a Zach Randolph, showing the young guys how to be pros, how to be NBA players, because that you need people like that.
I know, and that's my counterpoint, is that the Kings and the Suns almost have too many of those guys. They've got Eric Bledsoe, they've got Tyson Chandler, and they've got Jared Dudley, and Memphis just pulled in George Hill, Zach Randolph, Vince Carter. They don't need three of these veterans who are really just going to take up minutes on teams that potentially aren't really going to contend for the playoffs, in my opinion. According to the Las Vegas Superbook, the Sacramento Kings are slated at 28.5, and then it was updated to 29 last week. I don't know where they got that extra half win from, but they won 32 games last year, half of those, of course, with DeMarcus Cousins. And let's see what they got. They lost Aaron Aflalo. That looks like Darren Collison, Tyreek Evans, Langston Galloway, Rudy Gay, Ty Lawson, Ben McLemore. So a bit of an overhaul, but like we said, they did bring in George Hill and Zach Randolph and Vince Carter. These guys are going to want to win games. So yeah. Where do you have them at, Zach?
I might keep him at that even. It's a bit of a push, but I really like De'Aaron Fox. I got to see him because I'm an LSU guy, so I got to see him play at Kentucky. And I think De'Aaron Fox is the truth. I think he's got that great mindset. He's just so fast. He's John Wall out west, I think. He's just a blur with the ball in his hands. I don't know how this Harry Giles thing is going to work because he's supposed to be uber talented, but just coming off those knee injuries at Duke. And then the other thing with Harry Giles, you have Harry Giles, you have Willie Cauley-Stein, and you have Skal Labissiere and Kosta Kupas. Why do you have four centers? What do you need that for?
Yeah, they and the Phoenix Suns just have this like glut of depth that really doesn't quite fit yet. You can't really I don't know. I don't see either of these teams as winning more than 30 games. They just look like a mishmash of young talent that it's not really a wholly developed roster at this point. You agree?
I agree, but I think, would you agree that I think the Kings are maybe starting to turn it around? I know that's you have to show it, but I think they got the right personalities. Like I said, I'm big on Fox, especially with that leadership, those intangible things people talk about. You got guys like Garrett Temple, you got Zach Randolph. I like Frank Mason. Buddy Hield's a great teammate. I think Sacramento in a couple of years could get there.
Yeah, it's a lot of possibility. It kind of reminds me of the Baby Bulls back in the early 2000s when you've got all these like high picks or guys who are touted by NBA scouts as, you know, being promising young NBA players, but we just don't know if any of these guys are going to take the next step. If one or two of these guys does take the next step, then all of a sudden you've got, you know, two building blocks to build around, and you've got a lot of young talent that you can either trade for superstars. We've seen this past offseason that it doesn't take much to acquire an NBA star. You just need a promising young player or just a worthwhile NBA contract like a Jay Crowder type thing. So if any of these guys do work out, then yeah, they're going to be in enviable positions, but we just don't know. So it's a nice time to be a fan of those two teams because you do have all these possibilities. But whether or not it all comes together this season and one of these players takes the next step, we'll just have to find out. And that brings us to another team in a similar situation, the Los Angeles Lakers, who are slated to take a jump from 26 wins last year to 33.5. Do you think they're going to win that many games? Let's cover who they lost. They lost Tarik Black, Timothy Mozgov, David Nwaba, Thomas Robinson, D'Angelo Russell, Nick Young to Golden State, obviously. And they brought in Lonzo Ball, Vander Blue, Andrew Bogut in a bit of a curious move. The big move of the summer was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And then, and Brooke Lopez, of course. And then some young rookies, Kyle Kuzma and Briante Weber, and also snatched Orlando Steven Zimmerman. Okay, over under 33.5, Zach.
I just think that number's too big, even though they brought in talent. But I think, and it's all a moot point, right? Because this is the last year the Lakers are going to be bad, because next year everybody's going to come to Los Angeles, right? This is what's going to happen. but I think I also like Lonzo. I think we had a really good point guard rookie class coming in. I like De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo. If he can be half what he's supposed to be, I think he'll be a guy people love to play with. He doesn't have to be a scorer, and he's not going to be, especially with that janky jump shot of his, but he's got that vision, he's got that handle, he's got that creativity. I think he's going to be a guy that people will want to play with. And I like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I actually kind of like the Andrew Bogut thing. I don't know how it's going to work, but I like that they have it. The Brook Lopez thing and Larry Nance Jr., Julius Randle, that's a pretty decent-ish front line for a team that's, I think it's just biding its time now. I think once again, the Lakers are going to come back. We've got to give it another year.
Yeah, I think Jordan Clarkson probably took a step back in most people's opinions last year. Another promising young guy that seems like he's not going to be much more than a seventh or eighth player in the NBA at this point. And he's on a pretty sizable contract. I think he's about $12 million a year. And as far as Lonzo Ball goes, yeah, he's got high upside. But I think just historically in the NBA, we just have more evidence than not that point guards don't put it together in their first year, really even in their second year. It's their third and fourth seasons when they begin to break out and kind of get comfortable. And it's a lot more difficult to quarterback an NBA offensive approach than we might believe, just because we think the guys like De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo Ball are so athletic and so intelligent coming out of college. But it really is just a higher speed, and it's difficult to figure stuff out. And I wouldn't assume that they're going to win more than 30 games this year either. And plus, you know, we have all this evidence from Magic Johnson himself got fined, I think, $500,000 this offseason, because they're not even thinking about their young pieces. Their minds are already in the future to Russell Westbrook, who just signed a 5-year, $205 million deal. But there were a lot of rumors about he, you know, picking up Paul George and taking him with them over to Los Angeles. So they're certainly banking on getting rid of all these contracts, like the Mozgov one, in order to clear space to bring in, you know, LeBron James or Paul George or DeMarcus Cousins. So what do you have them at? Do you have them over or under 33.5?
I'll say under, because somebody has to be bad in the West. We can't have – somebody just has to bring up the rear, and I think it'll be the Lakers. And I want to go back to one thing right quick. Speaking of second-year players, what do we make of Brandon Ingram? I'm looking at his height and weight. He's looking at 6'9", nice, but he's at 190 pounds. When is he going to start putting on weight again? Or when is he going to get up to the weight?
Did you actually see the report this offseason that he actually gained 2 inches this past offseason? He now stands at 6'11".
So he's got that Kevin Durant body, but we got to see if he's got that Kevin Durant scoring ability.
Yeah, here it is. It's on BleacherReport.com. It's silver screen and roll, clutch points. He's grown to 6'11", and he's quoted as saying, maybe I'll grow to Kevin Durant's height. So another apt comparison to Durant. That seemingly is what he gets a lot of. He certainly doesn't have the scoring touch yet that Kevin Durant has, but everybody's anticipating him taking a big step forward. But even with a big step forward, and even with Caldwell-Pope, it's like you said, somebody's got to be bad. And pretty much everybody from this point on, we're only at 13. There's 12 teams left in the West, and all of these guys are expected to compete. So we're out of the bottom dwellers, and we're now into the guys, the fringe contender or fringe playoff teams, I guess we should call them. And that's the Dallas Mavericks. And they won 33 games last year. They were one step behind the Pelicans, and they're on both Vegas Insider and the Superbook at 35.5. Their real major addition was Dennis Smith Jr., which they lucked into at, I think, ninth overall. Yeah, but
I like Dennis Smith Jr.
Yeah, he's going to be good. But again, you know, rookie point guard, you can't assume that they're going to put it all together in their first year. They didn't really lose anybody. DeAndre Liggins was their big departure. And They brought in a bunch of guys I don't know, a rookie PJ Dozier, Josh McRoberts, although I'm assuming they're going to waive him. I'd be surprised if he gave any minutes this year. And Jeff Withey, for the most part, everybody else is just training camp body. So we're going to see the same team we saw last year. Wesley Matthews is 1 year removed, or 1 year further removed from his Achilles injury. Nerlens Noel signed the qualifying offer. Dorian Finney-Smith re-signed. Devin Harris is back. Jose Barea and Harrison Barnes. Like, this is the same team we had last year. So where do you have them at? You have them over or under?
I go under. I don't like this Mavericks team. But where do you stand on Yogi Ferrell? Because I can talk myself into Yogi Ferrell, even though he seems like an anomaly for his size and his height. He's 6 feet, 180 pounds, at least what's on NBA.com he is. He can't be that big.
No, he's a little guy. But, I'll pull it up right. Sorry, go ahead.
But despite all that, he can ball, and I like him.
Yeah, just because we don't have that much evidence on him, it has him slated on Google as 6 feet, 180 pounds. He kind of had that Jordan Crawford-type breakout where he came out, he was shooting hot from deep every game, putting up points. You have to think that at this point, teams have more tape on him, more evidence of what kind of player he is, and they know a bit better how to play him. I'd be surprised if he comes out and enjoys the same success. But, you know, you've got him and Seth Curry next to each other to open up the floor. You know, Nerlens Noel is super active. So they will be moving around. They will be super athletic, and they are going to work hard. So, you know, somebody's got to be bad. But, we see time and time again, Rick Carlisle finds a way to make these guys play hard. But at 33 wins last year, with Dennis Smith being their lone addition, Dirk Nowitzki 1 year older, I don't know, man. I think they're going to tank, and I think they're going to go all in on, you know, trying to chase one of these higher name free agents, because you know there's not going to be a lot of teams next offseason with cap space. So if you have cap space going into this next offseason, 2018, it's almost like having another high lottery pick in terms of what kind of talent you can bring in. So I don't see Dallas re-signing Nerlens Noel yet, you know, going all in on this roster. I think they're still remaining flexible, and I think they still have a move or two that they're hoping to make this season. What do you think?
Yeah, but the thing about Dallas, the past couple of years, though, has been, oh, they got all this cash space. They're going to sign somebody. And they never got anybody.
Yeah.
Like, if there's Wes Matthews, and is Harrison Barnes really the best that Dallas can get? I mean, that's the biggest piece that they've added all this time. Unless maybe they just kind of go, like you said, they go all tank mode and really put Dennis Smith Jr. At the forefront, like, hey, we've got money. We've got Dennis Smith Jr. Come play with this guy. We've got Rick Carlisle, respected coach. We've got the piece. We've got a piece and the coaching and the money. Come help build this thing back up.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you. I've got them as under, and Harrison Barnes scored something like 18 points a game last year. He really enjoyed a breakout season. But in order for them to really contend for a playoff position this year, he's going to have to take another step. And I don't know if Harrison Barnes is a guy who's going to put up 22 points a game. And I don't know how much Dirk Nowitzki has left. And we don't know if Seth Curry and Yogi Ferrell can really put up points against, you know, they're going to have to beat the Portlands, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Timberwolves. They're going to have to beat these teams. And I just don't think they have enough. I don't know if Nerlens Noel is a first team all defense NBA or if he's going to take that next step this season. And they kind of have to hope he does at this point. But yeah, I've got the under for them as well. So I think we've got a lot of under so far. We're expecting these teams to be really bad. And here's where things get interesting, because next up, we've got last year's seventh seed, the Memphis Grizzlies, slated at 11th. They won 43 games last year. The Superbook has them at 37.5, and then Vegas Insider has them at 38.5. They lost to the Spurs 2-4 in round one last year. A really exciting series, actually. I remember after game two, Fizdale had those famous quotes: "The refs aren't going to rook us." He said, "Take that for stats," and he slammed the table. It was pretty cool, and they ended up winning the next two games in Memphis. So, a fun team to root for, but like we said earlier, they did lose Vince Carter, Zach Randolph. They did re-sign Jamichael Green to a two-year $17 million deal, and they brought in some promising rookies like Dylan Brooks. They got Tyreke Evans. They signed Ben McLemore, who's out for the next 2 months. I can't remember what happened to him, broken leg or something. So then, of course, they bring back some young guys in the roster: Wade Baldwin, Deontay Davis, James Ennis. They've got Mike Conley and Marc Gasol, and Chandler Parsons is said to be healthy. Where you got him at, Zach?
I'm going to go with the under for Memphis as well. I kind of think this is Memphis's last stand, and I think I don't like this roster anymore. We saw it for 6-7 years, and it never rested, and I just think it's starting to trend downward. I still like Mike Conley a lot, and I like Marc Gasol, but I don't really like a lot of these pieces around it. I mean, Tyreke Evans, Jarrell Martin's my guy from LSU, but it's just not there. And Chandler Parsons, is Chandler Parsons ever going to play basketball? I mean, what happened to Chandler Parsons, man?
I don't know, man. Series of knee injuries. Poor guy, but he is getting paid 4-year, $95 million contract. So
yeah,
whether or not
good money if he can get it.
Yeah, good money if he can get it. So the Grizzlies kind of have to hope that he's going to bounce back, but you know, he hasn't played a lot of games in the past 3 seasons, so this could be the end for him. And if we do see them come out of the gate slow, I don't know, at what point do you start talking about Marc Gasol trades and trying to snatch that Brooklyn pick from Cleveland? But I don't know, I think he's a homer. I don't think he ever leaves the Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies always fight hard, and they always manage to surprise everybody and win 40 games. So I've got them as under two, just because, you know, the next 10 teams in the West, we're all anticipating they're going to win a lot of games, and they're all kind of in a win now crisis modes for the most part. So I've got them as under two. You ready to go to the next one?
Yeah, let's keep going.
Here's the shocker. This might have a lot of fans miffed, but both Vegas sites have the New Orleans Pelicans as 10th in the West. The Superbook has them at 39.5. That was before the Dante Cunningham acquisition, and probably around the same time as the Tony Allen one. I can't remember exactly what date that transpired, but now they've got them at 40.5 post Dante Cunningham. Of course, they won 34 games last year. And the Pelicans are interesting because there's a lot of Western Conference teams like the Clippers, the Utah Jazz, the Rockets, the Thunder, the Wolves, who have had like such drastic changes to their rosters in the past, you know, 4 or 5 months that we really don't know what to expect, Zach.
I want to be so optimistic about this Pelicans team. I just keep asking my friends who watch basketball, like, why can't this Pelican team be good? And it's just there's no wings. That Solomon Hill thing, I'm not going to say that's going to tank the whole season, but you got Dante Cunningham and Darius Miller, who spent the past couple of years in Europe. That's the best that the Pelicans can work with. This is going to be tricky unless this Davis Cousins thing just has to work out. It just has to. There's no what if it doesn't. It has to. For a franchise like this, you don't get another chance at something so promising. I like Tony Allen, Drew Holiday, Rajon Rondo, Ian Clark, forcing you can play with back there. I think New Orleans could be this, like, Memphis reincarnated in a way, just souped up defensively, and they just beat the hell out of you. Two big guys. This Davis Cousins thing is like the maxed out version of Zebo and Marc Gasol. But it's just that wing position is going to be so tricky. And that's why I can't get a feel for what a starting lineup is going to be. It's going to be like what David wrote about a couple of days ago. The Pelicans starting five is probably just going to be, it's going to be Rondo, Holiday, Cousins, Davis. And then just this revolving door of, it might depend on matchup or who's been playing the best, but this has to work out, because if not, I don't know what the alternative is. I don't want to think about that. I want to be optimistic about this Pelicans team.
Yeah, Ollie really turned me around on this one. AD and Boogie post trade averaged 29-11 and 24-12 respectively. So the evidence is there that at least offensively it's going to work. And AD took a step on the defensive side last year, qualifying for the second All-NBA defense team. And I think the Pelicans ranked 9th overall defensively and 26th overall defensively. And our major concern with Solomon Hill is what a large step forward the Pelicans defense took last year with Darren Erman. He was really able to slow down some wings, played really well against, you know, Kawhi and LeBron, and did as good a job as anybody can do at slowing down Kevin Durant. And Alvin Gentry and Dell Demps have praised him multiple times over the offseason for doing that. But the thing about losing Solomon Hill is, while we do lose a very capable defender, he was a zero for us offensively. And when you put somebody like a a Tony Allen or an Etuan Moore or an Ian Clark or even a Darius Miller, any of those guys are going to take a step up. I know we all think of Tony Allen as a defender, and he is, but his numbers are better than Solomon Hill's, not just scoring, not just efficiency, but also rebounding. So where we do lose a little bit of defense, we should gain a little bit in offense. And as far as the Pelicans as a team, you've got two top 20 players, and they're at their prime, and they obviously want to win. And you just have to think that there's enough intelligence and veteran leadership around them to just make it work. And we won 34 games last year. So I think winning six more is certainly doable. And I think it's going to happen. And that's where we have us rated at right now. So I've got the over. I think we win 41 games next year, at least, hopefully somewhere around like 43 or 44 gets us into that seventh spot. Where are you at, Zach?
I'm going to take the over as well. And I got a question for you. How much check Diallo do we see this year?
You know, that's the interesting. And that's a question that I've been pushing forward since June, because not a lot of people brought it up. But now that we have Dante Cunningham, we have somebody who can give us minutes at the four. I was even more concerned about that. But I don't want Alexis Ejensa on the floor. He seems like a nice guy. I love his Twitter presence. His wife is equally hilarious. And he did give us good minutes against the Nuggets last year. But he also got a lot of DNPs, a lot of coaches' decisions last year. And we had Terrence Jones and Donatas Montiunas to back up that five. And now we don't have those guys. So we're going to have to see a lot of Shaq. And we have evidence that suggests that Shaq is going to get the ball. He's going to shoot it. He's not going to pass it. He's not going to move it. He's not really going to give us a lot of defense. He's a pretty good shot blocker, but he just lacks the overall awareness. And we even saw that in summer league this offseason. Is that, yeah, he can put up points and he's athletic on the end. And he's got a nice set of moves and pivots and stuff, but he just, I don't think he's ready. I don't think he's ready for more than 10 minutes a game at this point. So where are those backup 5 minutes are going to come from? They're going to have to come from Ejensa, or are going to have to go super small? Of course, everybody listening right now is going to say, well, it's not going to be a problem because one of Anthony Davis or DeMarcus Cousins are always going to be on the floor. And that's not the case, because last year, we saw at the beginning of the second quarter, there was always these 4 minute increments to start the second quarter where both guys were on the bench. He liked to give both of his stars rest at that point. Now, I don't know if he did that because he wanted to give them as many minutes together as possible to, you know, kind of build up their compatibility. But that's what the evidence suggests. We've also seen that DeMarcus Cousins likes to get into foul trouble. He averaged almost 5 fouls a game for the Pelicans last year, and it kept him at 30 minutes per game. I'm doing this all off memory because I was so upset about it. I was like, why does this guy keep getting into foul trouble? But there's definitely going to be some times where the Pelicans are going to have a backup five in there, and it's going to have to be Cheick Diallo. Do you prefer him or Ejensa at this point?
I'd rather Diallo. I kind of know what I'm going to get with Alexis Ejensa. And like you said, I don't like what I get anymore from Ejensa. I think Diallo is a really good unknown. And I think you got to turn him loose. But I hope he stays on the roster. I hope they don't keep bouncing him back and forth between the G League now, the Gatorade thing, whatever they're calling it. And he stays with the Pelicans and goes back down. And I got two more things about the Pelicans. Want to ask you, how much do you like this Chris Finch joining the coaching staff? Is that going to be the thing that really unleashes DeMarcus Cousins? And where do you stand on headband wearing Anthony Davis? Because I don't like it.
Well, it looks like, just from training camp videos, it looks like he's just stolen Dante Cunningham's headband, because Cunningham's not wearing a headband anymore. So maybe the two of them are just sharing at this point, where we're at the same level of headbands on the court. It's just one player gave one to another player. But just from talking to Ali and from listening to Jake Madison on Locked On Pels, it seems like Chris Finch's involvement is going to be a little bit more minimal than was previously suggested. We had this sweeping notion of a Nikola Jokic type offense geared around DeMarcus Cousins, and he's been interviewed and he gets kind of annoyed at that comparison, saying, you know, I'm not Jokic. I'm my own guy. I play my own way. And Chris Finch is just here to bring out everybody's talents. He's not here to necessarily, you know, turn me into another player that I'm not. And so we are seeing evidence that it's not going to be the Denver Nuggets offense that we thought we were going to see whenever he was initially hired. And he's just there to be an assistant coach, to bring out everybody's best talents and to work on these 4 or 5 pick and rolls that we're all anticipating we're going to see. We've seen Darius Miller hanging out in the corner a lot during training camp, working off screens as well. We've seen a lot of slashing and cutting from Jrue Holiday and Tony Allen. So I think we're just going to see another typical NBA offense, not necessarily the Denver Nuggets offense. What about you?
Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because I hadn't heard those things. I got swept up in the whole Cousins is going to be the Southwest version of Jokic. So this is I'm learning this on the fly. That's actually kind of disappointing, because I like Jokic a lot, and I was hoping that Cousins could be our Jokic, but I'm also cool with him being his own guy. Is Omer Asik even going to get on the floor this year? Is he even going to stay on the roster? I'm looking at his name now on NBA.com. I can't believe he's still playing basketball, or he's still getting paid to play basketball.
Yeah, so for our listeners out there, Omer Asik was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. That is, I'm not a doctor by name, but basically last February he went to Mexico and he caught this stomach bug, or so he thought. And after a week, he lost about 40 pounds and he hasn't been able to put the weight back on because of this infection. And now it just came out about a week or so ago that he has Crohn's disease. So he is out for the foreseeable future. It might be one of those medical redshirt situations where insurance is going to pay the life of his contract over the next 2 years. And, you know, we're all anticipating some sort of buyout that might save the Pelicans a couple of dollars. And maybe he'll be able to go back to Turkey and salvage his career and play out there. But I think at this point, most people are anticipating he's not going to see another NBA minute. And as far as the Chris Finch Denver Nuggets thing, if I could just go back to that for a second, I don't know if you listen to The Ringer or follow it, but I've never seen Ali Cassell so up in arms. It was actually kind of fun. Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer said that DeMarcus Cousins wasn't a good three-point shooter and wasn't a good passer. And Ali basically just burned the internet to the ground because, of course, we all know that DeMarcus Cousins was almost at 36% from three last year and knocked it down.
How dare you?
I know. How dare you? Knocked it down at a pretty proficient rate. He was an exceptional passer for the Pelicans. I didn't watch him as much with the Kings as other people have watched. But he's one of those few players in the NBA who has the strength and the vision to just whip the ball across the court to shooters on any side. Of course, he also is turnover prone. You see him try to dribble between his legs and bounce it off his foot, but he does have the capability and the talent to be one of the best big passing big men in the league. So if you can check out Kevin O'Connor's comments on that and just watch the corresponding Twitter rage that Ali Cassell followed with it, it's a pretty interesting follow. Let's wrap up the Pelicans, because we're not even to the top nine yet.
Yeah, well, if we're going to wrap it up real quick, I take you over, and I hope this team makes playoffs. Let's just leave it at that.
All right, Pels fans, there are nine teams slated above us, and next up is the Utah Jazz. Their over and under was 40.5, but now, and the Pelicans was 39.5, but according to the new Vegas Insider documents, it's got them taking a step back to 38.5. Of course, they won 51 games last year. Lost 0-4 in the second round to Golden State after getting past the Clippers in round one in a 3-4 series. Of course, the big name is Gordon Hayward. Let's see what else they did this year. They lost Boris Diaw, Gordon Hayward, George Hill, Trey Lyles in a peculiar trade to Denver. Shelvin Mack, Jeff Withey. And I say that because there's nowhere for Trey Lyles to play in Denver. They gave a first-round pick for him, and that's somebody the Pelicans could have used. So that was a strange deal. And then Denver went and traded a big man in the first round, I think 12th overall. So peculiar. But they do have high-upside guys like Derek Favors. Rudy Gobert is going to take even another step forward this year. He's going to be one of the best big men in the NBA. Rodney Hood, we're all expecting big things from him. They brought back Joe Ingles, who averaged something obscene, like 44% from three last year. Joe Johnson is still a scorer. And Raul Nato, what do you think?
I forgot Ricky Rubio and Bobby.
Oh, yeah, the trade for Minnesota. But, yeah, that's pretty important.
But I don't know. I think Utah is a team that New Orleans is actually going to pick off and leap over. I don't like this Utah team anymore. But I like Gobert. I like Gobert. I like Derek Favors. I think they take a step back.
Yeah, unless you're a big Donovan Mitchell truther, he's another one of these scoring rookies that that people are expecting big things from immediately. But you just never know. You have to expect against that. And they also brought in Jonas Jerebko, who can give meaningful minutes off the bench, 3-point scoring big man, kind of in the mold of like a Ryan Anderson. You've got Thabo Sefolosha, who they got at a great deal, something like 3 years, $18 million. I'm guessing that off memory, but another type guy who can be a shutdown defender and can really help their style. They you have to believe they don't take a step back defensively, especially with Ricky Rubio on the court. He's a willing and able defender. And if Ricky Rubio can get Derek Favors back to where he was 2 years ago, help Rudy Gobert's evolution, and, you know, get Rodney Hood up to 20 points a game. I don't know. I don't see them taking a big step back this year, but 51 games is definitely a bit too bold. But I think I've got them. I've got them over there at 38.5. And I think 40 to 41 wins is certainly in the realm of the possibilities. But I shall also preface that by saying we had a couple of years ago where everybody 3-6 was just within a game of each other in the Western Conference. And I think we're going to see something like that again, where there's a lot of teams just separated by 2 or 3 wins. And that's going to be somewhere in the lines of like 4-9 this season. So you said you had them under?
Yeah, I'm going to take the under. I think the ones are going to leapfrog past Utah.
You can't see a team with Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors and Ricky Rubio winning 37 games, but you never know. And of course, we haven't even factored injuries into any of these decisions. None of these teams are going to be this fortunate.
I just don't know where the scoring is going to come from either.
Yeah, I everybody's anticipating that Rodney Hood is going to become a 20 point per game scorer, and there's a lot of big fans of Donovan Mitchell. He had a nice breakout performance in summer league. I think he was the 14th, maybe the 16th overall pick in this year's draft. So he could have been a steal. So that's where they're hoping they're going to get it from, and also the Ricky Rubio factor. Michael McNamara is a big fan of Ricky Rubio. He thinks he just puts people in the right positions, just puts them where they need the ball, to where they feel comfortable, to where the ball just starts going in magically. So we'll see. They're definitely going to be a contender for the playoff spots this year, even though Vegas has them out. Next up, we have the Portland Trail Blazers. Last year, they won 41 games. They lost in round one to Golden State 0-4. And the Superbook has them at 42.5 wins, but Vegas Insider has them at 40.5. I think that's a bit closer. Of course, that Yusuf Nurkic, Nurkic trade did them a lot of favors last year. They played really well with him in the lineup. They unloaded Alan Crabb to save from lottery space. So they do lose a shooter, but they did bring in Zach Collins, a rookie. I think he was about 10th overall. They traded 2 first round picks to get him from the Sacramento Kings. And they also brought in some guys who probably won't see any minutes, like Archie Goodwin, Anthony Morrow. And they really only lost Crabb, Festus Ezeli, and Tim Quarterman. So where do you have them at, Zach?
I would take the over. I like Caleb Swanigan. That's the guy from Purdue, if I remember. I like that guy. But I'm also wondering, has Portland just kind of capped out? Have we kind of seen like as high as Portland can climb? Because I don't know how much more we can get out of this group.
Well, they do still have some movable pieces. Of course, if they ever wanted to blow it up, any team in the NBA would be happy to take CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard off their hands. But then they've got a bunch of these guys, these wing players like Al-Farouq Aminu, Mo Harkless, Myers Leonard, Noah Vonleh. They've just got too many bodies at all these positions. Ed Davis. So if they ever did want to unload these guys, I think they'd be able to do it either for free or maybe attach like a second round pick to it. I think there's a lot of teams in the NBA who could use somebody like a Mo Harkless. Noah Vonleh would work right under the Pelicans trade exception. Of course, they can't use the trade exception because they have no cap room left. But stretch somebody like Alexis Ejinsa, Noah Vonleh would be a great guy to slide into those backup 5 minutes. So they do have some flexibility. The real albatross is that Evan Turner deal at, you know, I think $17.5 million per year. And I don't even consider him a starter in the NBA right now. He is about a year and a half removed from his injury. So, you know, maybe he regains his composure back from his days with Boston. But so far, we've seen that Boston is being the only place he's been where, you know, you had a coach capable of utilizing his best talents, because he's not a knockdown shooter by any means. He almost is kind of like a .4 at this point in his career. Is a bit too slow to be a 3. I don't know. Where do you have this team?
I'm gonna take the over. I think they make playoffs, but I think, and maybe I'm just being optimistic again, I think New Orleans can also leap over Portland. So I think Portland will bring up the rear, still make playoffs, but be that 8 seed, or maybe just miss out by a game.
All right.
Also, I'm remembering I spent the whole night, one night, on the Bird Rights Twitter spelling Myers Leonard's name wrong the whole time. So if he's listening, which he's not, I'm sorry, Myers Leonard.
Of course he's listening. This is a very popular podcast. We've got almost 30,000 downloads, and one of those has to be Myers Leonard. There's no dispute. Okay, I've got this team as over just because every year around All-Star break, we see Damian Lillard get snubbed, and we see it just light a fire under his ass after that point, and he starts putting down, you know, like 32 points per game. Obviously, he's a minus defensively, but he just does so much offensively. And CJ McCollum just keeps taking steps forward. And when Yusuf Nurkic was out there and he was healthy, these guys were dominating. So I've also got them over. I've also got them in the playoffs. I've got the Grizz falling out and the Jazz hopefully falling out. And this takes us to another team that could potentially take it a step back, losing Chris Paul. We've got the Los Angeles Clippers, who last year won 51. The Superbook had them at 43.5. Vegas Insider has them at 42.5. They lost 3-4 to the Jazz and round one. And they're another one of these teams that's going to be super tricky to figure out just because there's so much, so many transactions that have happened this year. They lose Chris Paul, but they bring in Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, Danilo Gallinari, who has a broken hand because he punched someone in Euro basketball, which is pretty awesome. Montrezl Harrell, Marshall Plumlee, Willie Reed, Mios Teodosic. They drafted Sendarius Thornwell and Lou Williams. So I mean, they've got a deep roster. They're handing the reins over to Blake Griffin. They're about to re-sign DeAndre Jordan, according to reports. So these guys aren't going anywhere. The only players they lost: Brandon Bass, Jamal Crawford, Luke Mbah-Moute, Paul Pierce, JJ Redick. So it's a bit of an overhaul. You would think it takes them a second to put it together, but do they, Zach?
I think they hang in there, but the Griffin thing, I'm really interested to see what Blake the man is, you know, but he's also out for a couple of weeks, right? For a couple of months until I thought December, right? So that's going to take a little bit of an adjustment time. But I like that they didn't blow it all up. They easily could have done it, but they kept some pieces. They might have even upgraded some areas. I like that they're a little bit deeper. And also, like, let's not forget, Jerry West joined the organization, so he's taken over those GM duties, and Doc Rivers can just be Doc Rivers' coach instead of Doc Rivers' coach and GM, because I think this is about as deep as the Clippers have been in a couple of years, and that was always their downfall. They didn't have the bench, they didn't have the supporting guys, they had maybe 6 or 7, they didn't have 9 or 10 like this current group probably has.
It's gonna be tricky because they managed to do very well in this Chris Paul trade, which was a big score for Houston. But at the same time, you know, they only got him to a 1-year deal, and they gave up a lot to get that 1-year deal, including a first round pick. So Los Angeles really did well in this transaction. And a lot of people have them in the playoffs. Vegas has them as the 7th seed, but I don't know, Blake Griffin's injury history. I can't even remember how many surgeries he had at this point. Zach was mentioning a toe injury. He's hoping to participate in training camp, but he's been limited thus far. But we just have a history of him missing games at this point. And without him, with that, you know, cacophony of, I don't know, veteran NBA guys, but are they good enough to challenge in the West? I think the answer is no. I've got them as an under, and I've got them falling out of the playoffs last year or this upcoming year. But I know I'm one of the few, but, you know, the Trailblazers and the Pelicans have to be there. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm going to disagree. I think they still stay in the playoffs, but maybe as a 7 or maybe cap out as a 6. I think it all depends on how quick Blake comes back. Because I just read a thing. He's hoping to be back by training camp, but it was reported he'd be out till December. That's such a wide variance up. He's just going to be here as the season starts, or he's going to come in midway through. That's such a weird one or the other.
Yeah. Well, if you've got the Clippers in the playoffs and we've got the Trailblazers in the playoffs, then one of the next two teams is going to have to fall out. And I'm anticipating you're going to say it's this next team. The Vegas Superbook has the Denver Nuggets at 45.5, and Vegas Insider has them at 43.5. They won 40 games last year, and they really didn't lose a lot. So you'd have to anticipate that this team has a lot of stability right now, and their big acquisition, of course, was Paul Millsap, who's going to add a lot. and they only lost Danilo Gallinari, who's a good player, but he was really never available for them. So I'm on board with this team taking a step forward, and they've got young guys who are going to be playing better, like Malik Beasley, Will Barton, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, all these guys fighting for contracts, for playing time, high upside guys. If they can get anything out of Emmanuel Mudiay, that would be a bonus. And of course, possible dark horse MVP candidate, Nikola Jokic. I don't know. I've got them in the playoffs. Where do you have them, Zach?
I've got them out, actually. I'm wondering, we talked about the Chris Finch thing in New Orleans. What does this do to Denver now that he's not there anymore? Does this change the offense in any way? But I mean, there always have been pieces about Denver that I like. I've always been a Fareed guy. I like Will Barton. I like Jokic a lot. But I don't know. I got to see it. And I don't think they're going to get there. I hope he makes it, because I wrote about him. They drafted Monte Morris out of Iowa State. I like him a lot. I don't know if he makes the roster or not. He might be a training camp body, but he's a real stable ball handler, especially if Mudiay is fringe, because I know people are a little unsatisfied over there in Denver with him. If they need a guy, I think Monte Morris could be that guy. He was a 4-year starter at Iowa State, and he holds a record, the assist to turnover ratio record all time, I believe. So if they need that second guy or someone to possibly take over from Mudiay, I'm hoping it's going to be Monte Morris.
And Mudiay is a guy that would also fit very nicely under the Pelicans trade exception should Rajon Rondo or Jrue Holiday miss any time at this point this season. Our backup point guard would have to be some version of Ian Clark or Etuan Moore, guys who aren't truly suited to really manage that position. Of course, you know, we probably go to a situation where DeMarcus Cousins becomes a point center at that point. But the Pelicans could possibly be in the market for a point guard, and Emmanuel Mudiay would be a great candidate for that should that happen. Should one of those two older players, well, I shouldn't call Jrue Holiday older. He's only 28. But, you know, these guys with injury history, should they miss any time, this could be a potential guy that the Pelicans could go after. But we're running out of time, Zach, so let's take a step forward. You've got the Nuggets as out. I've got them in. We're up at the Minnesota Timberwolves, another team in the West with a major overhaul. They brought in Aaron Brooks, Jimmy Butler, Jamal Crawford, Taj Gibson, and Jeff Teague. And they lost Omri Caspi, Chris Dunn, Jordan Hill, Zach LaVine, Adrian Payne, Nikola Pekovic, and Ricky Rubio to go along with Brandon Rush. Let's see where Vegas has them at 48.5 or at 46.5. They won 31 games last year. I just think it's really hard in the NBA for a team to go up 17.5 wins, especially with such a massive overhaul. Where do you have them?
Yeah, that number's insane. I think the Timberwolves are going to be good, but that much better? I don't know. I think they can make playoffs, because I like Towns and Wiggins and Butler and Teague. There's a lot of time, Taj Gibson, but that's a huge number. So I'm going to take the under, but I think they still make playoffs.
Yeah. Okay. So we have our playoff guys now. We've got Portland, the Pelicans. I've got Denver, you've got the Clippers, and then the Timberwolves, and then some version of Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Houston, and Golden State. Let's get right up to who Vegas has as number four, the Oklahoma City Thunder. 51.5, they won 47 games last year, and after the Carmelo trade, they're now at 52.5. They lost in round one, 1-4 to the Rockets. They just locked up their MVP, Russell Westbrook, to a 5-year, $205 million contract, the richest contract ever given in the NBA. So let's see what else they've done. I know they had some version of Patrick Patterson was brought in. Let me pull it up. Okay, here we go. So Carmelo, of course, Raymond Felton. I didn't know about that one. Paul George, Patrick Patterson, and that's it. And then, of course, they re-signed Andre Roberson to a pretty favorable contract, and they still got, you know, Alex Abrines, Steven Adams, Nick Collison, Josh Huestis, and Jeremy Grant, who they gave up a first-round pick for last year. And they lost Norris Cole, Taj Gibson, Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, Victor Oladipo, and Domantas Sabonis, pretty much all of those players, to acquire their two new superstars, except for Taj Gibson. Where do you have them?
I'm going to go over. I like this Thunder team. how high do you think the Thunder can go, or how deep of a run can they make? Because I think they can make Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I definitely could put them at the Western Conference Finals. Although, I don't know. The Rockets are tricky. They're another one of these teams we don't know what to expect from. But we know San Antonio, and we know they're going to win somewhere in the mid to late 50s. Just, you know, based on evidence, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. And we're going to talk about them in a second. But I think they can give any of these guys a run for their money. I just don't know that they put it all together with Carmelo Anthony. You've got three, you know, ball dominant superstars who, you know, we just trust they're going to be able to put it all together just because they're such good friends. They played U.S. basketball together in a kind of similar situation with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, where you have all this talent out on the court and you just have to assume they can make it all work. But Paul George and Russell Westbrook, I can see that working just because Paul George can be such a wonderful defender. He's so active at all times. He's a guy that always tries hard. He always gives 110%. Can't necessarily say that about Carmelo Anthony. He's a guy who likes to have the ball. He stops the ball. He likes to work up at the elbows. And I don't know how well that's going to sit with Russell Westbrook, because when they had Kevin Durant doing sort of the same thing up there, it caused a lot of strife between the two of them. And Carmelo's going to be asked to do even more than he was ever asked to do in New York and Denver, because he's going to be asked to rebound. He's going to be asked to guard bigger fours. He's going to be asked to use his body more. He's going to get beaten up. He's going to be doing a lot of the Kevin Love not so pretty type things. And is he going to relish that type role, Zach?
I don't know. If he plays like Olympic Carmelo, because that's always been the best version of Carmelo Anthony, if that's the key. The thing that fascinates me about Melo, with all the moves that he was supposed to be going to, he's supposed to go there or this place, there was always that, well, does he want to live there, because he lives in New York and he has Lala. That it just got to a point, and I can't blame him, where he just said, forget lifestyle, get me the hell out of New York, I'll go to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and they certainly got him in a sweetheart of a trade, just giving up Doug McDermott and Enes Kanter to get him. I don't know what kind of picture is the Thunder Sam Presti has of these other two franchises who gave up their stars for seemingly nothing. I think the New York Knicks would have been better off just to buy Carmelo out, or just let him play, because if anything, he drives fans to Madison Square Garden. They can get their ticket sales up a bit higher. I don't know how much they gain by bringing in Doug McDermott and Enes Kanter. Of course, it might be one of those toxic situations where you're like, you know what, we just need to hit the reset button and give Porzingis the ball and the offense and Frank Nicotina. But with that being said, I think a buyout is still a better bet than having Enes Kanter on your books for $18 million a year. But we are at a time crunch. We've got three teams left. Let's go to San Antonio. They're anticipated at 54.5 wins. They won 61 last year. Of course, they still have Kawhi Leonard, who a lot of people are picking as the possible MVP candidate this year to go along with LeBron, just because it's going to be hard for James Harden and Russell Westbrook now that they're surrounded by other superstars. Let's talk about guys that they brought in. Not too much. I don't even know who Darren Hillard is. Rudy Gay, Joffrey LaVerne, and Derek White was one of their rookie draft picks. They lost Joel Anthony, Dwayne Dedmon, David Lee, Jonathan Simmons. Simmons and Dedmon, of course, are the big ones. Those were big contributors. Dwayne Dedmon even started. They brought back Paul Gasol on a 3-year, $48 million deal. So he is probably going to be their starting center next to LaMarcus Aldridge. And then, you know, they've got young guys, Kyle Anderson, Davis Bertans, and DeJounte Murray and Bryn Forbes. Guys who we don't know a lot about, but we just assume they're going to take the next step because it's Greg Popovich. Right, Zach?
Yeah, and that's what's going to – this might be a little bit of a hot take, but, like, this, we know the Spurs are going to be good, but, like, are we sure the Spurs are going to be, like, Spurs good? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm just nervous for the Spurs in that – I thought the 3-year, $48 million deal was too much for Pau Gasol. He seems to be slipping. LaMarcus Aldridge seems to be slipping. He seems to just be unhappy. He's not playing as well as he did. I remember 2 years ago when he was playing against Omar Asik and Dwight Howard. I think it was two, maybe 3 years ago. He was still with the Trailblazers at the time. He was destroying some of the better defenders at their respective positions in the NBA. I think he scored 45 points two games in a row. He's not that player anymore. He can't just dominate. I don't know if the game is changing or if he's taken a step back, but he's not that surefire all-star that he was 2 years ago, and he seemed to have taken even another step back during the playoffs, where he was virtually a non-factor for some of those games. Kawhi Leonard is carrying even a heavier load than he had to previously. And Pau Gasol is basically a turnstile defensively at this point in his career. He's still a capable rebounder and a scorer, but having him at the center position next to LaMarcus Aldridge, how do the Spurs keep playing defense, Zach?
I don't know. And the Spurs made Western Conference Finals. How much better did they actually need to make the roster? But I don't think this roster got any better. And you're going to have Kawhi. But once Kawhi went out last year, once he got his ankle rolled, that roster got exposed. And, yeah, they played Golden State, and they're a modern-day juggernaut. But those Spurs looked awful those last three and a half games of the Western Conference Finals. And, there's infrastructure and Pop and Kawhi, but it sort of felt a little smoke and mirrors after Kawhi went out.
Yeah, it's hard to believe they were up in game one by 23 over the Warriors and seemingly about to knock them out in game one in Golden State. But, of course, Kawhi Leonard landed on two different feet. One of them was David Lee's foot on his own bench. And the second time was, of course, the Golden State center. Oh, my God, his name's escaping me. I see. Game seven. Zaza. Game seven, baby. Zaza. And now the refs are going to crack down on that more than ever on the closeout. I wish we could have seen that series with Kawhi Leonard in there because he was unconscious at that point, just dismantling Golden State. So I've got them right around 54.5. I don't necessarily have them over. I don't necessarily have them under. I know that's not a number, but I could see them winning 54 or 55 games. I definitely see them in the top three again, just because you have to trust Pop, and Kawhi Leonard is just so damn good. I remember last year, he's like a snake in the grass. Solomon Hill and Dante Cunningham did a real good job in slowing him down. He had he was somewhere around 20 points, very quietly scored 20 points, a lot of them on foul shots. And then at the end of the game, we had a 2-point lead, and Drew Holiday, he just took the ball away from him. Drew Holiday was just casually dribbling at the top of the key, and Kawhi Leonard just with his big bear paw, he just knocked it out of his hand, went down, scored a dunk, tied it up, and then I can't remember how the Spurs got the next basket after that, but It's almost like it was casual to him. He was like, oh, we've got a minute left. I better win this game. So definitely very afraid of the Spurs. And I think they stay right where they're at, somewhere around 54, 55. Let's go to the Rockets. We've only got 3 minutes left. Of course, they had a big offseason trading a lot of their young guys, as we discussed earlier, to bring in Chris Paul. Although that's not it. They also did some other nice moves. PJ Tucker at the mid-level, Luke Mbah-Moot. They got him on the on the minimum deal. They also brought in Tim Quarterman for some backup point guard minutes, I guess I would assume, and Demetrius Jackson and Tarik Black. And they really didn't lose much other than that. Let's see where Vegas has them, Zach. 55.5 pretty much across the board. They won 55 games last year. I think that's pretty spot on. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to say over, but I got my eye on this Houston team. I'm not sold on this Chris Paul, James Harden thing. Are we sure this is going to work out? Because I'm skeptical.
I definitely think it's going to work out in the regular season just because they can so easily just, you know, have Chris Paul command those second units and James Harden, for the most part, command the first units. And other than the first 8 minutes at the start of the game and the 8 minutes at the end of the game, it's really not going to be a problem having these two guys in the same court except for, you know, 16 minutes a game. And I think they can figure that out pretty well in the regular season. It's when we get to the postseason that we're going to begin to see these guys break down and begin to see somebody like the Spurs really take advantage of them. And I see them as a regular season performance artist, but once we get to the playoffs, I don't see them getting past the second round. What about you?
Well, you're saying the Chris Paul team won't get past the second round of the playoffs?
Was it that subtle?
Hey-o. And plus, the personality difference in Harden and Paul. Paul is an asshole, and Harden just seems so laid back. I think Harden's going to hate Paul and vice versa.
I don't know. The guys have been really well in touch all year. They're obviously close friends. They've been working out together all summer. So there's got to be some kind of connection there. It's just we see time and time again that when we get into the playoffs and things start to look down, James Harden checks out. He checks out. Chris Paul gets angry. Chris Paul starts making enemies. And, you know, we can definitely fast forward to May right now when, you know, the Rockets are trailing in a game six against the Spurs. They lost 114-75 last year in game six because James Harden virtually just stopped playing. And that's definitely when we can see a fight breaking out between Chris Paul and James Harden, and Chris Paul potentially, you know, heading out. He's on a 1-year deal. So that's where I think their season and possibly relationship ends. But who knows? Two top five players on the same team. Got to hope they can put it together. We're not even going to talk about the Warriors just because I don't think we need to. They added Omri Caspi and Nick Young, and, you know, they didn't really lose anybody other than Matt Barnes, James McAdoo, and Ian Clark, who's now a Pelican. So anything you want to add about them?
No, I was just saying, like, how high would too high be for their over-under wins? Like, 81.5? I could be talking like 81.5? Hell, give me the over. You know what I'm saying?
I know. They're
just so good. They're just so good.
They're at 67.5, and I'll take the under just because I don't see them trying that hard. I see them winning somewhere around like 62, 63 games just because Steve Kerr himself said this morning, he said they had a 12-minute scrimmage, and the guys were tired. I think, you know, that it's a long season. It's a long playoffs. I think they played something like 17 games in the playoffs last year. So, you know, you can just see them just taking a step back and celebrating and relaxing and working all these shoe contracts and TV deals and whatever else they're working on outside of the NBA. And I just don't think they try as hard in the regular season anymore. It turns into one of those Miami Heat type scenarios where they kind of coast through the regular season, win as many games as they need to lock up the one seed. And they just kind of mail in the rest and they get to the playoffs and they just dominate everybody again. But let me let you go, Zach, because I got to go. Thank you all so much again. Again, you've been listening to Zach Junda and myself, Preston Ellis. We're giving you the over-unders. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to retweet, share, and rate us on iTunes. And make sure to subscribe on our pod so you can enjoy our Southwest Division preview as well as our Media Day special. Tomorrow we should have another pod with Ollie and Trevor, who are attending practice today. So look out for that. Zach, any parting shots, man?
No, say no to gambling. But if you do listen to this podcast, then if you win, we told you to. If not, we told you to say no to gambling.
You're the man, Zach. And we'll come back at you guys in a little while, and we'll give you the East over-unders as well. But for now, I'm Preston. That's Zach. Let's go, pals.